The following podcast represents the opinions of the host and is for educational purposes. These are not accusations, and everybody is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Due to the graphic nature of this episode, listener discretion is advised.
Can we talk about the hardest subject? So when we were talking, the last time we talked, the last thing we talked about was where the girls were, but we never really got to talk about that night. What happened?
So nothing really happened that night. It was in the morning.
Okay.
It was, you know, me and Jeanette, she got home like at 2 o'clock. And you know, I felt her get into bed. And I just felt like I really didn't feel it. I just wanted to make sure, I looked at my phone at 2 o'clock and make sure she's okay, she's in there. And I could kind of feel her kind of stirring around a little bit. And I just had a feeling that she knew, like, what was going on. Because, I mean, obviously, I didn't use, I didn't have a gift card, you know, that I'd gotten. I'd use my actual credit card, and I kind of just felt like something. She knew what was going on, and she started rubbing her hand on me, and we ended up having sex, but, I guess that was more like a test.
Oh.
I would have thought.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because when we talked, when I woke up later on in the morning, like, you know, I pretty much, you know, told her, like, you know, I didn't think it was going to work anymore. And she was like, what happened? What was last night? You know, so after that, that's called the test, after I've gone through everything in my head.
That makes sense.
And she just told me, you know, like, to get off of her. And she's like, I knew there was somebody else. I couldn't just say, yes, there is somebody else, but then she's like, you're never going to see the kids again. Never going to see them again. Get off me. Don't hurt me. And then,
is that what she said?
Because I was good. Like, when I climbed in bed, that was pretty much, like, on top. Pretty much, like, straddling her, kind of doing.
Okay.
And she thought I was gonna, like, you know, hurt her or her baby or something. So, because she knew that, like, you know, something had happened. She thought I was just trying to, you know, just check out or something. So,
okay.
And that's when
it's hard.
This is the Watts Tapes. I'm your host, Garrett, and this is the 5th chapter in the series. Last episode, I discussed the sequence of events leading up to the disappearance of Shanann Watts and her two daughters, Bella and Celeste. A concerned friend had reported Shanann missing, and the police were searching the Watts residence. Throughout the footage, which you can see for yourself at theunforgivables.com, it shows a man on the edge of his rope. The walls were crumbling in for Chris Watts, and he'd been caught off guard. As a fan of true crime for as long as I have been, I can say with confidence that it is truly a rare thing to have something like this body cam footage. It plays out like some sort of sinister Shakespeare production, with multiple acts from start to finish. A digital carving that will be available for any future true crime enthusiasts and keyboard crusaders for decades to come. It is something to be seen. The aura of guilt is thick in the air and the tension can almost be felt through the screen. Throughout all of it, Chris sways back and forth, sweating like a pig and always texting or making phone calls. At points you almost forget that you're watching the body cam footage of a police officer, until a question is asked here and there, or a hand appears over the lens. But you can sense Officer Coonrod's suspicions. All the while, an eerie silence pours over you. Then, at one point, Chris Watts walks into one of the rooms and slowly walks out, a ring held out on his index finger. He shows it to Nicole Atkinson. He's just standing there with a weird expression on his face, appearing confused. Then he walks back into the room. Officer Coonrod says nothing. And then a neighbor tells Officer Coonrod that his security camera caught something interesting that morning. Chris Watts' neighbor, Nate, would also play a crucial role in this case. It would help law enforcement connect the dots. His information would prove fatal to Chris Watts' credibility as the concerned husband, but would also, once again, raise more questions than answers.
Uh,
As the officer walks in Nate's house, everybody is crowded around the television. Chris Watts is seen with his back towards the television. He could care less about the footage. He's just trying to ignore the situation. He's not concerned, and he's not of any help either.
My book bag, my computers, some of the tools that I have in the toolbox. I knew I was going to have to do some pumping into rubbers today. That's why I was out so far.
Is this on continually?
Yep.
Recording?
Yep. Well,
it's not. Is it motion or is it? Okay, so it's motion.
Any motion event that happens, I got. But I get cars driving from this street. And this is him at 517.
As soon as the footage starts, Chris Watts' face turns white. He puts both hands above his head, and he starts swaying back and forth. In the top left corner of the screen, you can see his truck backing into the garage. He didn't expect this. He looks like he's hyperventilating. In his mind, in his plan, this wasn't supposed to happen. Although you can't see much aside from him backing up into the garage, it's his body language that gives him away. If you haven't seen this footage, I suggest you watch it. You don't need to be a detective to know something's wrong with this situation. Throughout my research, I came across one theory again and again. The theory goes like this. On the morning of August 13th, there was a gray truck parked outside the Watts home, and it appeared to be a Dodge Dakota or a similar make. What I find interesting is that this theory came up again and again, and although some of the details would vary from each version of events, the one thing that remained consistent was the truck parked outside of the Watts house. So I wondered, whose truck was it? Or better yet, did the truck even exist in the first place? If there's one thing I know, it's that you shouldn't believe everything you read online, especially when it's related to anything to do with an unconfirmed theory, no matter how credible they seem. But, as I pointed out before, within this skyscraping haystack, there are still a handful of needles. And the more you find, the more things start to make sense. But the more things start to make sense, the more I start to question. What really happened the night of August 13th, 2018? And could there have been more to this story? At 12:08 a.m. on the morning of August 14th, 2018, not even 12 hours since he learned of his family's disappearance, Chris calls Nicole Kessinger, and the two speak for 31 minutes. The details of this call is unknown, but considering the series of events that occurred earlier in the day, I could only imagine what the conversation was about. And then, at 1:12 a.m., Nicole calls Chris back, and the two speak for another 3 minutes. Then, at 11:51 a.m., Chris calls Nicole again, and the two speak for another 8 minutes. And then, again, at 12:06 a.m., Chris calls Nicole, and the two speak for just 1 minute. I can't help but wonder what the conversations in those early morning hours could have been about. Chris Watts' family had just vanished out of thin air, and the police and the entire community were doing everything they could to help figure out where they went. And the one thing on Chris Watts' mind is talking to Nicole Kessinger. At approximately 4:38 a.m., Sandra Ruchek, Shanam Watts' mother, called law enforcement and spoke with Officer Goodman. Sandra was upset and told Officer Goodman that she and her husband believed that her daughter's and granddaughter's disappearance involved foul play, and that she honestly believes that her son-in-law was involved in the disappearance. She stated that Chris was acting weird and out of the ordinary. She found it weird that Chris kept telling people he has to go to work, and that just didn't seem right considering his entire family was missing. And she would also say that she felt he was going to go out and pour oil on the bodies to dispose of them somewhere. Sandra said she felt Shanann came home late from her trip and she was exhausted, and that she and Chris had an argument, but due to Shanann's lupus, she wouldn't have been able to fight him off.
This is Denver 7 On Demand. I'm Tom Mustin with the latest from Denver 7. Frederick police are searching for a woman and two kids who've been missing since Monday. Pregnant 34-year-old Shannon Watts and her two daughters, who are 3 and 4 years old, was last seen by her husband at 5 o'clock in the morning Monday. Her friends and family have not been able to contact her. Frederick police tell us, quote, most of the department is working to find any leads.
By the morning of August 14th, America heard the news. A missing family. A small town on high alert. And, as usual, more questions than answers. Eventually, everybody would see the interview. Eventually, everybody would learn the truth. Or, at least one version of it. At 9:30 a.m., drones flew over 2825 Saratoga Trail. Shortly after, Chris insisted he move his work truck down the street, because he figured Shannon might not return home if she saw his truck. And then, an hour later at 11:45 a.m., the canine unit arrived at the Watts home. It's a cadaver unit, dogs trained to sniff out the slightest inkling of death. Officer Kate Lyons' body cam footage was interesting. As it starts out, you can see a camera set up on the Watts' front driveway. Chris Watts is standing in front of his garage. Casually, he has yet to fully grasp the gravity of a situation. He's giving an interview. As the canine search continues throughout the house, they eventually make their way into one of the bedrooms. They walk into a closet. It's painted hot pink with a whole entire wall stacked with women's shoes. And that's when I heard it.
Yes.
A giggle. An officer Line did too.
Go in there and step on that little blue thing and see if that's where that noise came from.
Yeah, it sounded like a kid toy.
It sort of sounds like it.
Something. There was a... I heard it.
Did you hear it?
I did.
It sounded like a kid giggling or something, didn't it? Or a kid...
It did.
I'm not sure what that sound was, but it gave me chills. It's interesting in the video how the dog seems to react mostly in the basement of the Watts home.
There's a dead wasp on the bed, but there's a sleeping mask right here, too. There's a sleeping mask right there, too.
And this has not been cleaned up like anything else.
Sure hasn't.
See, this may be her scent. Something has set him off.
Well, that's a night sleep.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. A night sleep mask.
Something has set him off down in this area. Maybe get Jeff or one of the others in here.
I'll have Officer Perez send one of them in.
Before they get going, just bring them down into this area and see. And just because he's so intense. Okay, that's a good boy.
I just shut it off.
It's hard to tell where that scent's actually coming from.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'll get him out.
Hey, can you send one of the canines down to the basement, please?
Let me get him out here.
Yep, she's going to take her dog out, and we need to have one of them come in, and I'm going to stay in the basement and wait for them.
The dog senses something, and his reaction is an obvious indicator of foul play. But that didn't add up. Something wasn't right.
On Tuesday, which would have been the 14th of August, you had read some newspaper articles on the 13th and the 14th that regarded this case. You had also had a conversation with Chris at some point during the day on Monday.
When Weld County detectives sat down with Nicole Kessinger following the disappearance of Chris Watts' family, things just didn't make sense. In light of what was happening, Nicole's behavior just struck me as odd. There were a couple things that just didn't really add up. And if you've listened to previous episodes, then this next clip will surely raise some questions.
And on Tuesday, because of what you found. Specifically, what you said was, and don't let me put words in your mouth, but you found out that his wife was pregnant.
Yes.
And you did not know that prior?
No.
And you found that out via the newspaper articles, and that caused you concern.
Well, I just realized that he was lying to me, and I was like, well, if you can lie to me about this, what else are you lying to me about? And it made me realize that maybe his wife was in danger at that point, and it was day two, too, and she still wasn't home.
What did that cause you to do with your phone, though?
Oh, what, when I deleted those? I was just kind of grossed out by him, to be honest with you. I was just like, I don't know what's going on right now, but you just lied to me, and I don't want to see this come over my phone anymore. So I removed it.
So you you already said, but you removed text messages?
I deleted all of his stuff because he lied to me. I mean, that's what it was. It was the hurt that made me delete it. And then it was the lie that made me start questioning everything else he'd been telling me for the last few days.
And that's when you decided to come forward?
Yes.
Okay.
Throughout my search and finding the facts and piecing together this giant puzzle, I found some pretty interesting things. I know I'm not the only one who has found them, and I know I won't be the last. But the trail of breadcrumbs are scattered in the endless pages of documents, the police interviews, and one by one, I've tried my best to find them. But one of the facts I find most interesting, most intriguing, the one fact that raised more questions in my mind and fueled my suspicions over almost anything I can think of, occurred on August 14th, 2018. At 5 o'clock p.m., just 1 hour and 20 minutes after Nicole Kessinger claimed to have read an article about Shanann Watt's disappearance, she once again opened up Google and typed into the search bar, "Can cops trace text messages?" And then, 24 minutes later, she once again typed into the search bar, "How long do phone companies keep text messages?" As the canine unit was searching the Watts residence for any sign of foul play, Chris Watts agreed to an interview. In the video, he is standing in front of his garage, his body language is guarded, and in my opinion, he's not even showing the slightest emotion. I'm gonna play portions of the interview. It's pretty strange, and I'm sure a lot of people watching the news that morning thought the same thing.
I want them wherever they're at. Like, I have no inclination of where they're at right now. Like, I've exhausted like every friend that I know of, and every friend that I have has called friends that Shanann has that maybe I didn't know about. And it's just like, it's vanished. Like, she's not, like, when I got home yesterday, it was like a ghost town. Like, she wasn't here. Kids weren't here. I have no idea like where they went. And it's just earth shattering. I don't feel like this is even real right now. It's like a nightmare that I just can't wake up from.
Chris, when did you learn that they weren't here?
Like, yes, well, I had texted her a few times and called her. I didn't get a response, which that was a little off. And then her friend Nicole showed up about a little afternoon. I could see it on the doorbell camera. And I was like, hey, what's going on? She's like, I can't get a hold of Shanann. And that's when I was just like, all right, something's not right. If she's not answering the door, and she said the car was here, it's like, I got to go home. And we got here, got inside, and nobody was here. Nothing.
Within 24 hours after Chris Watts' family disappeared, the town of Frederick, along with law enforcement, were all trying to figure out what happened. Flyers were made and distributed by police. They knocked on doors and spoke with neighbors. Nobody saw anything suspicious. Saratoga Trail is a quiet street. Not much happens. At least nothing that would raise concerns among the sleepy residents. But then they spoke with Bette. And suddenly things started to make a lot more sense. And this crazy theory just might be true after all.
They're very quiet.
Okay.
I never hear any noises. They have a little dog.
Okay.
And I hardly ever see any lights on.
Okay. Anything different over the last, I don't know, 2 days, 3 days? Odd vehicles, odd noises, odd lights?
There was a truck out here yesterday. In fact, that's why I thought you were here yesterday. Maybe
okay.
Someone complained about that I hadn't seen before.
What type of truck?
It was kind of almost a steel gray.
Okay.
Don't ask me, mate.
Okay.
Year. but that was late afternoon. The dad has a great big truck, and it's gray. But this one was smaller.
Okay.
This one was smaller.
But
I hadn't seen it before, so I...
Any markings or stickers or anything that would be weird? You wouldn't by chance remember if the plate was green or red or...
No, I kind of just glanced. I don't pay any attention because he... I believe he owns his own business or something because he always has a truck parked there, so okay. Kind of...
I gotcha.
I just kind of noticed it wasn't the normal truck.
Was it dirty by any means?
No, it wasn't, and it couldn't be.
To join the discussion and gain access to police reports, interviews, and material related to this episode, head to theunforgivables.com. Content is updated weekly, and you're welcome to review the documents and come to your own conclusions.
Thanks for listening to the Watts Tapes. We'll be back next week with a new episode, and you can listen to all the episodes of the Watts Tapes for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, as well as anywhere else you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave a 5-star review. It really does help.
Yes.
Okay. So then at some point, does she wake you up or is it you waking up for work?
Not a lot of more.
Oh, okay. And you're going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's when she started talking, wanted to talk more. And she was pretty mad.
Okay. Yeah, she, I mean, it was, I had already kind of knew that. Using that credit card,
was that intentional?
Yeah.
I had no other way to do it.
Oh.
Because I got these Anadarko gift cards from, like, doing good stuff at work and stuff like that, and I had used them all.
Oh. Was part of it just like, screw it, whatever, I don't care, I'm using this card.
It felt like, looking back at everything, just reading the scripture more and more now, I can see, God told, gave me opportunities to get out. Like, even my friend Jeremy Lindstrom, he even invited me, because, it was his daughter that came and watched the kids on Saturday night. And he was like, hey, you said we're going to a Rocky game, you want to go to me with the Bronco game and watch the Arizona Cardinals? Like, in my mind, it was like, go. Just say, hey, I can't find a babysitter. Bye.
Nikki.
Yeah. And maybe that would have been like a light switch in my head goes off, light switch in her head goes off, maybe it just goes different directions. Mm-hmm. That was kind of like my last opportunity to kind of get out, it seems like. Cause I wish I would have said, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
And I think that would have just put me on a different trajectory.